Isn't enough. The clock ticked down toward my 30th birthday, and every passing day amplified my anxiety. Whenever I thought about my endless to-do list, my breath ran short and a tidal wave of overwhelm crashed over me. However, I kept all that to myself as I took Vuk and Willow on a tour of the vault. We're preserving the original floors and windows, but we're turning the teller enclosures into bottle displays, I said. The bathrooms will be where the private counting rooms are, and safe deposit boxes will be painted over so they form an accent wall. Vuk listened, his face impassive. Instead of the designer suits favored by most CEOs, he wore a simple black shirt and pants. Beside him, his assistant took copious notes on a clipboard. Willow was a 40-something woman with bright coppery hair and a no-nonsense attitude. Either she could read minds or she'd worked for Vuk long enough to read his mind, because she asked all the questions he would have asked had he, well, actually talked.
When's the construction going to be finished?
She asked. Since it was an active construction site, all three of us wore personal protective equipment, but I could picture her eagle eyes drilling into every detail behind her safety glasses. End of the month, I said. Farah's already sourcing most of the furniture and materials we need so we can hit the ground running as soon as this is done. I swept my arm around the vault. Workers bustled back and forth, hammering nails, installing wiring, and shouting to one another over the whirs of drills and saws. Having so many contractors here at the same time wasn't ideal. It increased the risk of accidents. But given the ticking clock, I had no choice. I needed the basics in place before the new year so we could focus on the design. That took the most time, and I wasn't even counting other things I had to do like hiring and marketing. Vuk was a silent partner. His primary contributions were his name and money. The rest was up to me to figure out. I tamped down a familiar swell of panic and answered the rest of Willow's questions as best I could. I wasn't an expert on the nuts and bolts of construction, but I knew enough to satisfy her curiosity for now.
Hey, boss!
Ronnie, the lead electrician, approached me halfway through my tour. He was a short, stocky man with eyes the color of old pennies and a face like a rock, but he was the best in the business.
Can I talk to you for a sec? It's important.
Shit. That tone of voice didn't bode well for my blood pressure. While Vuk and Willow examined the teller enclosures, I followed Ronnie to the back of the club where a mess of wires crisscrossed in some sort of nightmarish Gordian knot.
We've got a small problem, he said. This wiring hasn't been updated in decades. The situation isn't dire, you've probably got a year or so left before a rewire is no longer optional. But I figured you might want to get this done before you open.
What's the catch? An update was simple enough. Ronnie wouldn't have called me over unless there was something else.
Can't get it done before the new year, he said.
A full rewire of this scale will take at least 10 days, and that's not counting the necessary finishing decoration works.
There were 14 days left in the year.
Ronnie went on holiday starting Wednesday. I opened my mouth, but he shook his head before I uttered a single word.
Sorry, boss, no can do. My wife has been planning our Christmas trip since last Christmas. If I cancel or postpone, she'll cut off my balls, and I'm not being figurative. No amount of money is worth my balls.
It's a matter of timing. I'll cover all the expenses for your trip if you take it after the new year.
Ronnie grimaced. She'll cut off one ball for even suggesting that. Christmas is her thing.
I could tell there was no swaying with him, which left me with limited choices. Choice number one, I could try and find another electrician who could get the job done in time, possible, but the quality of their work might be lacking and would lead to bigger headaches down the road. Choice number two, I could wait until the new year to rewire, but that would mean pushing the design plans back. Considering the timeline and all the scheduling and labor that went into that process, it was the least desirable option. Choice number three, I could stick with the current wiring and update once the club was up and running. Again, it wasn't ideal, but nothing about my situation was.
You said the situation isn't dire, right? So we don't have to rewire before the club opens, I said.
No, but...
Ronnie hesitated. The insulation has worn off on a few wires, so there's a safety issue.
Double shit. I rubbed a hand over my face, a headache setting in at the base of my skull.
How big is the safety issue? It's not an emergency, but it's something to keep an eye on. Gotta make sure the wires are handled properly and don't overheat, or you're in for a nasty shock. I summoned a half-smile at his pun. Have you been running into any electrical issues? He asked. Flickering lights, power outages, or the like? I shook my head. Then I think you're okay for now. Again, I recommend rewiring as soon as possible, but I know you have a deadline. I'll try to do as much as I can before I leave for the holidays. Ronnie nodded at the wall. So, what'll it be? Part of running a business was making hard decisions, and I made mine before I could overthink it. We'll rewire after the design is finished. Who knows, maybe we'll get it done before the opening, I said with more optimism than I felt. Maybe, Ronnie shrugged. You're the boss. With that behind me, I rejoined Vuk and Willow, who tucked her clipboard into her car-sized purse.
I'm afraid we have to leave early,
she said.
Mr. Markovich has a personal emergency he must attend to.
I flicked my eyes at Vuk, who didn't appear particularly concerned about his alleged personal emergency. Perhaps he and Alex were related. They possessed roughly the same range of emotional expression.
We'd like to finish this walkthrough another time,
Willow said.
Mr. Markovich is indisposed for the rest of the year starting on Sunday, but we can come by Saturday morning. He has a few more questions regarding your plans for the club.
Sloan and I were supposed to go ice skating on Saturday, but I didn't want to insult Vuk again by postponing. If I finished the walkthrough in the morning, that left the afternoon and night free for our date. I smiled. Saturday it is. Saturday morning dawned bright and clear. Sloan had stayed over last night, and she was still in bed when I slipped out to meet Vuk. She rarely slept in, but I kept her busy all night, so I didn't wake her before leaving. The city was already awake and busy when my cab dropped me off at the skyscraper housing the vault. A family of tourists in matching Christmas sweaters blocked the building entrance, and I had to endure their impromptu daytime caroling as I skirted around them. At the same time, someone came around from the other side and bumped into me. A baseball cap shattered half his face, but he looked vaguely familiar. Before I could investigate further, he disappeared around the corner, and my curiosity about his identity became an afterthought when I entered the vault to find Vuk and Willow waiting for me. He wore the same black shirt and pants. She'd changed into a red dress that matched her hair. Add some green accessories and you'll give the Rockefeller tree a run for its money, I quipped. Willow was not amused. I'd paid the construction company a shit ton of money to work weekends. Even then, they could only spare a skeleton crew this close to Christmas. There were only three workers inside, which made this walkthrough much easier than the first one. Actually, it was more than easy. It was smooth. Perfect. Until it wasn't. I'd just finished answering Willow's last question about the security measures when her head jerked to the left. Beside her, Vuk tensed, his nostrils flaring with the first iota of emotion I'd seen in him. Is something wrong? I asked.
Do you smell that?
Willow's voice and body were drawn as tight as the strings of a violin. I paused, my senses pushing aside the overwhelming construction site sense of wood and metal to focus on the whiff of something harsher. Smoke. The realization hit right as the drills died and a panicked shout reverberated through the room.
Fire!
What occurred next happened so fast, my brain didn't process it until the back wall burst into flames. More shouts, running, movement, heat. So much fucking heat. It was the bad kind. The kind that hit you like a sudden power outage, plunging crucial corridors of your mind into darkness and short-circuiting the pathways between your brain and muscles. Choking, paralyzing, life-stealing heat. Sweat enveloped my skin.
Javier, ¿dónde estás, mi hijo?
She was trapped. Couldn't get past the front door. Died of smoke inhalation. Lucky we recovered her body. It should have been you. My mind seethed with visions better left buried. Reality wavered, switching from past to present and back again. It should have been you. An attempt at air drew in smoke instead of oxygen. I coughed, my lungs burning, and ironically, that was what snapped me out of it. The smells, the heat, the panic. I'd been here before. I'd almost died when I was 10. But I wasn't 10 anymore, and I'd be damned if I let another fire finish what the first one had started. I blinked and my surroundings rushed back in horrifying clarity. Flames danced around me with malevolent glee, spreading faster than my eyes could track them. Their red and orange tongues reached hungrily for anything in their path and cast a surreal glow on the vault stone floors and ribbed ceilings. The temperature soared to such unbearable heights that every inch of my skin screamed for relief. Still, my feet remained rooted to the floor. My mind was back, but my body remained frozen until a loud crack finally, thankfully, shattered my numbness and spurred me into motion. I didn't waste time checking to see what had caused the sound. I simply ran, dodging abandoned tools while covering my mouth and nose with my forearm. Flames rushed toward me like ants streaming toward an overturned picnic basket, and I made it halfway to the exit before a wave of dizziness slowed me down. I stumbled but didn't stop moving. I was already lightheaded from the smoke. If I stopped moving, I would die. I made it another 10 or so feet when a flash of black caught my eye. My heart stopped. Vuk.
Markovic!
I coughed from the effort of shouting amid a scarcity of oxygen.
We have to get out of here.
The fire was closing in fast. If we didn't leave soon, we'd get trapped. Vuk didn't move. He stood there, his eyes blank, his body so still, I couldn't even see him breathe. If he weren't standing, I would have thought him dead. Willow was nowhere in sight.
Vuk!
I didn't give a shit if he hated his given name. I only cared if it got through to him. It didn't. Damn it. I silently cursed, using every English and Spanish expletive I knew as I closed the distance between us and forcefully hauled him toward the exit. I was in excellent shape. I worked out regularly, and I packed a good amount of muscle. But trying to drag 235 pounds of uncooperative Serb through a fire was like trying to pull a freight train with a toy car. Sweat poured into my eyes. My muscles weakened and turned slack. The distance between us and the door stretched endlessly, each step akin to climbing a different Mount Everest. Part of me wanted to give up, lie on the floor and let the flames burn away the pain and worries and regrets. But if I did that, if I didn't get us to the exit, we'd die. I'd never see Sloane again, and I'd be responsible for yet more death. I couldn't let that happen. Through sheer force of will, I dragged us inch by inch across the floor. I wasn't breathing so much as gasping now, and bursts of darkness peppered my vision. But somehow I did it. I didn't know how. Maybe it was the same superhuman strength that allowed mothers to lift entire cars off their children. Or maybe it was my body's last rallying cry before it collapsed. Whatever it was, it pulled us through the vault exit and toward the stairwell. The door flung open, and suddenly black and yellow streamed past my vision. I glimpsed the letters FDNY before someone pulled Vuk off me, and someone else grabbed hold of me, and we were moving, ducking, hurrying up the stairs while other crew members battled the encroaching fire. I let them guide me, too dazed and disoriented to do more than follow. But I looked back once, just long enough to see the vault, my dream, and everything that came with it, burn. Chapter 38. Javier. It had been the wiring. After the smoke cleared and the first responders' questions were answered, I sat in the back of an ambulance watching the activity around me with dull eyes. The cause of the fire wouldn't be official until the city and insurance company investigated it. But I'd overheard snippets from the firefighters. Electrical fire. Outdated wiring. The same wiring I'd told the electrician to keep a mere 2 days ago. A small logical part of me said it wasn't my fault and the fire would have happened anyway because he wouldn't have finished the rewiring even if I'd given him the go-ahead. A larger, more insidious part asked why I hadn't taken the proper safety measures before I'd opened the vault to dozens of contractors and put them in harm's way. I should have made sure everything was up to code before I rushed into construction. But I hadn't because I'd been so fucking focused on meeting the deadline. One mistake, and people had gotten hurt. The lingering burn in my throat reignited. The immediate symptoms of my smoke inhalation had cleared after the medics had treated it with high-flow oxygen. But I still felt raw and bruised,
like someone had turned me inside out and kicked me until I bled. Luckily, no one had died, but two of the construction workers had been transported to the hospital with severe burns. The remaining worker made it out with some bruises and a broken hand after something fell on it. I hadn't seen Vuk since the firefighters rescued us, but I had seen Willow waiting outside, her face the color of snow. By the time I finished answering the medic's questions, Vuk and Willow were gone. I was lucky there hadn't been more people inside and that the fire hadn't spread to other floors or damaged the structural integrity of the building. I was even luckier the fire hadn't happened after the club opened and was packed with people. But I didn't feel lucky. I felt like I was drowning. My fault. This was all my fucking fault again. I scavenged for a scrap of emotion, anger, sadness, shame, and found nothing but a terrible, all-encompassing numbness. Even my guilt was hollow, like the fire had sucked the essence out of it and scattered its ashes throughout my body. It no longer manifested as sharp knives piercing my conscience. It was just there, pervasive and intangible. Why had I thought I could do this? Opening a nightclub in 6 months was madness, and I should have never tried. I should have known rushing things would lead to disaster. But I'd been too blinded by pride and ego. It should have been you. My father glared at me, his eyes bloodshot from grief and alcohol. You should have died, not your mother. This is your fault. He'd been right. He'd always...
Javier.
A new voice penetrated my fog of memories. It sounded far off, like something out of a dream. Cool, smooth, feminine. I liked that voice. I had a sense that it had brought me great comfort in the past. But it wasn't enough to rouse me from my stupor.
Javier, are you all right?
Ripples of concern disrupted the smoothness.
What happened?
Pale blonde hair and blue eyes filled my vision, blocking my view of the skyscraper medics and curious passerby. Sloane. One out of 1,000 knots loosened, but that was enough. The world snapped back into crystal clarity. Car horns blared from the street, first responders wrapped up their work, and the ugly phantom of smoke snaked through my lungs. It was a crisp December day. But the acrid fumes clung to me like saran wrap, sinking into my skin and suffocating me from the inside out.
Javier.
Warm hands framed my face.
Look at me.
I did, if only because I didn't have the strength to argue. Worry etched across Sloane's features. Her gaze roved over me frantically, and when she spoke again, her voice was softer than I'd ever heard it.
Are you okay?
She repeated. She was bundled up in a cashmere turtleneck, coat, and pants. It was an odd thing to notice given the circumstances, but it reminded me we were supposed to go ice skating today. At this very moment, we were supposed to be at Rockefeller Center, people watching over hot chocolate. It was funny how days, plans, lives could change just like that. One blink and everything was different. I'm fine. I said. My voice sounded as hollow as my guilt. That was the thing. I was always fine, and it was always the people around me who suffered. I lived. My mom died. I came out of the vault without a scratch while two men had to be treated for third-degree burns.
What happened?
Sloane asked, her voice still soft.
How did...
It was an electrical fire. I said flatly. I laid it all out for her. The wiring, the electrician's warning, my decision to push off on the update, and most importantly, my lack of foresight in taking care of these things before construction had started.
This wasn't your doing.
Sloane had always possessed an uncanny ability to read my mind.
The electrician himself said the wiring wasn't an emergency. You-
Maybe not. But it was my job to think about things like that. I set my jaw. I can't cut corners like that. Imagine if this happened after the club opened. It would have been another Coconut Grove. The 1942 fire at Boston's Coconut Grove was the deadliest nightclub fire in history.
But it didn't.
Sloane stood firm.
I talked to one of the responders. No one died, and the physical damage isn't as bad as you think. The vault has a lot of fireproof elements. It'll be tight, even tighter than before, but with the right crew, you can rewire the club, fix the fire damage, and open in time. Maybe it won't be—
What? I stared at her, trying to process her words. They made sense individually, but together they formed a jumbled mess. What are you talking about?
The club. I did some quick calculations. It'll take 2 months to clean up the damage, which throws off your initial design timeline, but if we scale back the interiors and focus on the experience, it's doable.
I couldn't believe what I was hearing. We're not scaling back anything because the club is done. It's not happening. Shock registered on Sloane's face.
Javier, the vault is salvageable.
No, it isn't. The loosened knot from earlier twisted into an unbreakable coil. I gave it my best shot, and this is what happened. I gestured around us. If this isn't a fucking sign to quit, I don't know what is.
This isn't a sign of anything.
If I was stubborn, she was unyielding.
It'll be harder, but if—
Damn it, Sloane! A torrent of pent-up emotions punched through my numbness. Pain, fury, frustration, regret. They all poured out, eating away at my rationality and restraint until I was nothing but pure, unadulterated instinct. And right now, my instinct was to lash out at the closest target. I don't give a shit about the club or its design, I said low and vicious. People almost died because of me, because of my oversight and decisions I made. I survived a fucking fire this morning, and you think I want to plan a fucking party? That's the last thing on my mind. Sloane's mouth trembled for a split second before she squared her shoulders and raised her chin.
I understand you're upset, and you're right,
she said with infuriating calm.
Now isn't the time to discuss business. We can do it later, after we get you—
We aren't discussing it later or ever. I couldn't breathe past the pressure choking me. I told you the club is done. Do you hear me? As in it's never happening. Why don't you get it?
Because I know this is your emotions talking?
Her composure finally snapped.
You went through a lot today, and I'm not trying to downplay that. But you can't make a decision about your entire future based on—
Yes, I can. I stood needing to move, needing to do something to feed the ugly beast prowling inside me. Trying to secure my fucking future almost got people killed. This project was impossible from the start, and I can't sit here and run business calculations when there are men lying hurt in a hospital because of me. Not all of us can go through life pretending they don't feel, Sloane. Unlike you. I didn't say it, but I didn't need to. That was the problem with us knowing each other so well. Sloane's skin leached of color. She'd taken a step back when I stood, and she stared up at me with something I'd never seen from her before. Raw, undisguised hurt. Hurt I'd put there. Intentionally, callously, and maliciously. I knew her weak spot, and I'd attacked it without thought. Emptied of fuel, the beast inside me deflated, leaving only regret in its wake. Fuck. I reached for her, my throat clogged with the bitter residue of my words. Luna.
You're right.
She shied away from my touch, her eyes still glossy with hurt.
Not everyone can.
I didn't.
I have to go.
Sloane turned away, her chest rising and falling with rapid breaths.
We'll talk after things have calmed down.
Don't go. I'm sorry. I love you. Words I should have said but didn't. Couldn't. The only thing I could do was watch her walk away, as my world went down in flames for the second time that day.
Chapter 39. Sloane. He hadn't meant it. I knew he hadn't meant it because at his core, Javier wasn't cruel or malicious. He'd been upset about the fire and lashed out. In hindsight, I shouldn't have pushed him so hard about rebuilding the club after the fire. It had been the wrong time. But when I saw him sitting there, looking like a shell of himself, I'd panicked and defaulted to what I did best, solving crises. I hadn't known how to assuage his guilt, so I'd tackled the concrete issue of his club instead. Logically, I understood all that. But emotionally, I couldn't dig out the barbs of his words. They'd embedded themselves in old wounds, tearing through scabs and sutures to pour salt into raw flesh. Not all of us can go through life pretending they don't feel, Sloane. If anyone else had said what Javier said, it would have stung, but I would have brushed it off in short order. After all, I'd been accused of worse over the years. But coming from him, the sentiment devastated me. He wasn't entirely wrong, which was why it hurt so much. No one liked hearing the sting of truth from the person they cared about most, especially when it was delivered in anger. Even a week later, even knowing he hadn't meant it, it hurt so much I couldn't breathe. That was what terrified me the most, the fact someone else had that much power over me. More popcorn? Alessandra nudged the bowl into my lap. I shook my head, watching our fourth holiday rom-com of the day without really seeing it. My review notebook lay empty in my lap. Every time I tried to write something, I pictured Javier playfully teasing me about it, and I lost my words. This movie is boring, Isabella yawned. Maybe we should switch genres, watch a thriller instead. That's fine, I said without enthusiasm. I wasn't in the mood to see fictional couples get their happily ever afters anyway. The concept of a happily ever after was a total scam. My friends exchanged glances. It was the day after Christmas and a full week after the fire. The accident had made headlines, but everyone had been distracted by the holidays, and it hadn't generated the same media firestorm it would have, had it happened any other week of the year. I'd told my friends what happened and declined Alessandra's offer to spend Christmas with her and Dominic. The only thing worse than being alone on Christmas was being a third wheel. Isabella and Kai had been in London, and Vivian, Dante, and Josie had gone to Boston to visit Vivian's mother, so the last thing I'd expected when my doorbell rang that afternoon was to see my three best friends crowded in the doorway, armed with enough popcorn and wine to fell an elephant. It had been the only bright spot of my week. While Isabella searched for a new movie, Vivian regarded me with quiet concern. "Have you talked to Javier since Saturday?" she asked gently. The question scraped against exposed wounds, and I shook my head, refusing to meet her eyes. Do you want to talk to him? Again, I shook my head, this time with less conviction. Javier and I hadn't talked or messaged since I walked away after the fire, not even to wish each other a Merry Christmas. Part of me had been tempted to reach out first, make sure he was okay, and apologize for overstepping. But pride and self-preservation stopped me every time I picked up my phone. Maybe our not talking was for the best. Obviously, I didn't know how to comfort him properly, and my presence made things worse instead of better. You have to talk to him eventually. This time, Alessandra was the one who spoke. Your dating trial is expiring soon. Pain cleaved through me. I know. I wouldn't win awards for my eloquence today, but I was afraid that if I uttered more than a handful of words at a time, it would destroy my already tenuous grip on my emotions. I hadn't allowed myself to fully feel the implications of what happened with Javier and the silence that had followed, and if I had my way, I never would. Some things were better left repressed. Isabella paused her search for the perfect thriller, and there was another exchange of glances around the room. What are you going to do when the trial ends? Isabella asked cautiously. I set my jaw against the pressure swelling in my chest. I don't know. Except I did. I just didn't know if I had the strength to go through with it.
Javier. I could describe the week after the fire in one word. Hell. The paperwork? Hell. Visiting the hospital and seeing the workers' burns up close? Hell. Speaking to the workers' agonized families? Hell. Not seeing or talking to Sloane while knowing how much I'd hurt her the last time we spoke? Hell times a fucking thousand. I should have run after Sloane and apologized right after she left. But I'd been worried I'd make things worse. I hadn't been in the right frame of mind to do anything except go home, pour myself a glass of whiskey, and pass the hell out. The days after that had been filled with phone calls, meetings, paperwork, and a million other things I didn't want to do. I tried to contact Vuk but couldn't get through, and I'd spent Christmas at home, torn between calling Sloane and avoiding our inevitable confrontation like a coward. The coward won out. I wasn't proud of it, but our trial dating period ended soon, and I didn't need a genius level IQ to know I'd blown it. As long as we didn't talk, I could live in denial and pretend we were going through a minor hiccup, which was how I ended up at Valhalla's bar the Sunday after Christmas, drowning my sorrows with Lagavulin. I finished my drink and motioned the bartender for another one. He slid a fresh glass of whiskey across the counter as someone settled on the stool next to mine. "Save it," I said without turning my head. "This is quite sad." Kai ignored my preemptive dismissal, his tone mild. "Have you considered other methods of coping besides drinking by yourself at," he checked his watch, 3:00 PM? "I'm not in the mood for your judgment, and I'm not the only one sitting at the bar at 3:00 PM. I cast a pointed glance in his direction. "Aren't you supposed to be in London right now? We flew back early at Isabella's insistence." A delicate pause. "Apparently one of her friends needs major cheering up." Her words. It was obvious who she'd meant. My gut twisted at the indirect mention of Sloane, and it took everything in me not to interrogate Kai. "Has Isabella talked to Sloane already? What did she say? How is she doing? How much does she hate me right now?" "Her friend isn't the only one." Kai nodded his thanks when the bartender brought him a strawberry gin and tonic. He had a strange affinity for that particular cocktail. "I'm sorry about the fire, truly." He sounded sincere, which made it worse. The past week hadn't done much to ease my guilt, and I felt like I didn't deserve people's sympathy. "Have you talked to Alex yet?" Kai asked. I grimaced. "Not yet. We're meeting tomorrow." I wasn't looking forward to it. Alex's assistant had scheduled the meeting, so I didn't know how his thoughts regarding the fire in his building, but I imagined they weren't pleasant. "I haven't talked to Markovich since the fire either." I flashed back to the wild look in Vuk's eyes and the old burn scars around his neck. "He disappeared when we got out of the vault." "Do you think?" "The Serb does what he does," Kai said. Most people referred to Vuk as the Serb per his preference, but I couldn't shake the habit of calling people by their, well, actual name. No one knows what goes through his head. But if he hasn't dissolved your partnership yet, I assume everything's fine. My shoulders tensed. Kai's eyes sharpened behind his glasses. "Is everything fine?" "Besides the small matter of the fire, sure." I tossed back my drink. "Because I'll dissolve the partnership myself after the new year. The club isn't happening."
"Why not?"
Another headache set in behind my eyes. I was sick and tired of explaining the same thing over and over again. I clipped out the same reasons I'd given Sloane. Like Sloane, Kai seemed unimpressed.
"People make mistakes," he said. "Entrepreneurs make even more. You can't succeed in business without failing, Javier."
"Maybe not, but I bet most mistakes involve a disrupted cash flow or media mishap, not a fire that could have killed people."
"Could have, but didn't.
By some miracle."
"I don't believe in miracles. Everything that happens, happens for a reason."
Kai turned to face me fully.
"That list of names I gave you, those are some of the sharpest people in business. They believe in you enough to invest their time, money, and resources into the club, and they wouldn't have done that if they didn't think you were capable of pulling it off. So stop using your martyr act as an excuse and figure out how to finish what you started."
The heated reprimand was so out of character for Kai it stunned me into silence. "We weren't friends exactly, and maybe that was why his words successfully cut through me," There was nothing quite so humbling or clarifying as getting lambasted by an acquaintance. I opened my mouth, closed it, then opened it again. But nothing came out because he was right. I was acting like a martyr. I'd taken the fire and made it all about me and my guilt, and I'd used that as an excuse to walk away from the club. Despite my success in getting the process started and the best of the best on board, I was afraid I'd still fail. The fire gave me an opportunity to walk away without admitting to that fear. I downed 3 glasses of whiskey before Kai arrived, but the realization sobered me up quickly. First Sloane, now this. I really was a coward. To think I accused Bentley of being that very thing when I'm worse. I swallowed the golf ball that lodged itself in my throat and tried to think logically. Kai might have been right, but it didn't change the fact that pulling off a grand club opening by early May was nearly impossible from a logistical perspective. I could throw together something smaller, but whatever I did needed to pass muster with the inheritance committee. Basically, I could try harder, but my chances of failure had increased exponentially. I rubbed my temple, wishing not for the first time that I'd been born into a simple, normal family with regular jobs and regular lives instead of this succession-esque mess. Isabella put you up to this, didn't she? Even in my current state, I was clear-headed enough to recognize that Kai's appearance in this particular place on this particular day wasn't a coincidence. He didn't respond, but the small twitch of his mouth said it all. How do you know I'd be here today? I asked. Educated guess. This bar has seen its fair share of comfort drinking. He nodded at the glittering display of expensive bottles and crystal glasses. I may have also asked security to alert me if and when you check in. I snorted. I'm flattered you went to the trouble. Don't be. I didn't do this for you, Kai said dryly. I did this for my reputation and for Issa. I was the one who connected you with the people on my list, and it'll reflect poorly on me if the club doesn't succeed. Plus, his gaze flicked to his phone. Issa would never let me hear the end of it if I didn't get you to pull your head out of the sand. Sloane. My hand flexed around my glass as another wave of regret crashed into me. She'd tried to help, and I'd driven her away. Then I couldn't be bothered to say a simple, I'm sorry, not even on Christmas, because I'd been too wrapped up in my own mental bullshit. God, I was an idiot. I stood abruptly and grabbed my coat from the hook beneath the counter. Listen, this was a good talk, but go. Kai returned to his drink. And if anyone other than Issa asks, this conversation never happened. I didn't need him to tell me twice. I sprinted out of the club and into one of Valhalla's chauffeured town cars. I gave the driver Sloane's address. It had been 8 days, 2 hours, and 36 minutes since we last spoke. I only hoped I wasn't too late. Chapter 40. Javier. I'm sorry, sir, but I can't let you go up, the concierge said with zero traces of sympathy. You don't have authorized access. I've been coming here for weeks. I tamped down my frustration in favor of a smile. Catch more flies with honey than vinegar and all that. Apartment 14C. Call her, please. I'm sorry, sir. This concierge was different from the one who'd let me up when I thought something had happened to Sloane, and he proved remarkably resistant to my powers of persuasion. Miss Kensington specifically left instructions stating that no guests are to be admitted without her explicit written approval. She's my girlfriend. I have written approval, I said. I wasn't technically lying. We were dating, and I didn't know for sure that she hadn't added my name to her list of approved guests. Perhaps you lost it. I didn't. Perhaps another concierge lost it. They didn't. I gritted my teeth. Fuck, honey. I wanted to shove this guy's head in a bucket full of raw vinegar, but I didn't have the time for petty violence or arguments. Let me up, and this is yours. I slid a $100 bill across the counter. The concierge stared at me stone-faced. He didn't touch the money. I added another $100 to the pile. Nothing. 300. 400. God damn it. What was wrong with him? No one said no to Benjamin. 10,000 cash. That was all I had in my wallet. That's tax-free money if you let me up for just a few minutes. I could bypass him physically, but without a resident keycard, the elevator wouldn't budge, and I wouldn't be able to open the door to the stairwell. Sir, this is unnecessary and inappropriate, he said calmly. I do not accept bribes. Now I must insist you vacate the premises, or security will have to escort you out. He nodded at the pair of Hulk-sized security guards who'd seemingly popped up out of nowhere. Sloane's building would be guarded by two stone mountains and the only incorruptible concierge in Manhattan. However, I wasn't leaving without seeing her, which meant I needed a plan C. I scanned the lobby, searching for another plausible avenue when my eyes fell on a small plaque mounted on the wall. The Lexington, an Archer Group property. My pulse jumped. Archer Group. There was only one person who could help me in that moment. Asking him for a favor wasn't the smartest idea considering I'd just burned down one of his properties, but beggars couldn't be choosers. One call to an annoyed Alex Volkov, and one very bitter concierge later, I stepped out into Sloane's hall. Surprisingly, Alex hadn't given me a hard time, though I suspected he was saving that for our meeting. But I'd worry about that tomorrow. I had something more urgent to attend to. I rapped my knuckles against Sloane's door. No answer, but she was in there. I could feel it. Another knock, my gut contorting into more and more knots as the minutes passed. It wasn't like her not to answer the door. Perhaps the concierge called up to warn her I was coming? I was about to call her just to see if I could hear her phone ring when I heard it. A tiny rustle of movement that cut off as quickly as it started. If I'd shifted, or if the elevator had dinged in that moment, I wouldn't have heard it. But I did, and it was enough to pour fresh energy into my efforts. A third, harder knock. Open the door, sweetheart, please. I wasn't sure if she heard me, but an eternity later, footsteps approached, and the door swung open. My heart stuttered beneath the blow of seeing Sloane again. The past week had felt like months, and I drank her in like a lost wanderer stumbling onto a desert oasis. She was barefaced and in silk pajamas, her hair twisted into a bun, her eyes wary as she kept a hand on the doorknob. Hi, I said.
Hi.
The seconds ticked by, tainted by the bitterness of our last conversation. Can I come in? I finally asked. It had been a long time since we were this uncomfortable around each other, and the tension cast a shadow over the entire hall.
Now isn't a good time,
Sloane said, avoiding my eyes.
I have a lot of work to do.
On the Sunday after Christmas? Silence. I rubbed a hand over my face, trying to piece together the right words in the right way. There were 1,000 things I wanted to tell her, but in the end, I opted for simple and honest. Sloane, I didn't mean what I said last week, I said softly. About you having no emotions. I was frustrated and upset, and I took it out on you.
I know.
I faltered. I hadn't expected that. You do?
Yes,
Sloane said stiffly. She went a teeny bit pink around her ears.
I should apologize, too. I shouldn't have pushed you so hard right after the fire. That wasn't what you needed at the time.
You were just trying to help. I cleared my throat, still feeling ill at ease. And I'm sorry for not reaching out on Christmas. Honestly, I was too ashamed to just call you like nothing had happened, and I figured you wouldn't want to discuss the fire during the holiday. It wasn't the best excuse, but none of my recent actions could be classified as smart.
You weren't the only one who didn't reach out. It's a two-way street.
Sloane slid her pendant along its chain. Maybe we can have a belated celebration, I said. The ice rinks are still open.
Maybe.
She was so quiet I almost didn't hear her. I paused, trying to paint why this whole thing felt wrong. At first glance, we were on the same page. I'd apologized, she'd apologized, everything was great. So why was tension still hanging over us like a storm cloud? Why wasn't Sloane meeting my eyes? Why did she sound so fucking sad? The only thing I could think of was... No. A surge of panic seized my limbs, but I covered my suspicions with a forced smile. So we're okay. I know we have a lot of stuff to figure out regarding the club, but you and me, we're okay? I searched her face for a hint, any hint, that she agreed. I didn't find it. And when she opened her mouth, a part of me already knew what she was going to say.
Javier.
Don't. I clenched my jaw. It's not time yet.
Our trial period ends in 2 days.
Sloane's eyes finally met mine, and it was like looking at a sea of stars in the night sky. They gave the illusion they were within reach, but if I extended my hand and tried to grasp those fleeting emotions, they'd slide through my fingers like whispered taunts.
What happens then?
Then we end the trial and start dating for real. I didn't bother playing coy. That's what I want, Luna. Tell me that's not what you want, too. I didn't know a lot of things, but I knew her. I knew she had feelings for me. I'd tasted them in her kiss, heard them in her laughs, felt them in the way she'd pressed her body to mine. They weren't the hallucinations of a man in love, they were real, and I'd be damned if I let them slip away. But when Sloane straightened her shoulders and her expression cooled, I had a sneaking suspicion that the feelings I thought would bring us closer would end up being the very things that drove her away.
I didn't want to do this today, but since you're here, we might as well.
Her knuckles whitened around the doorknob.
We had fun. I'm not denying that. But our trial period is all but over, and we won't...
She swallowed.
We won't work in the long term.
A strange roar erupted in my ears. What are you saying? I asked quietly. I knew exactly what she meant. But I wanted to hear it from her mouth. I wasn't giving her an easy way out on this.
I'm saying there's no extension.
Sloane's mouth wavered for a split second before firming.
I want to break up. Sloane, I was freezing. The heater was running at full strength, but goosebumps coated my arms and legs, and the doorknob felt like ice in my hand. Or maybe the cold was coming from the hallway, where Javier stood still as a winter night, his face carved with shock. As I watched, the sharp edges hardened into determination, and he shook his head.
No.
I closed my eyes, wishing I were anywhere but here, that his plea through the door hadn't weakened my defenses so much I'd abandoned my original plan to break up with him over the phone. That wouldn't have been the bravest thing to do, but it was preferable a dozen times over to witnessing Javier's hurt disbelief in person. I opened my eyes again and steeled my resolve against the voice banging inside my head, screaming, "Don't do this." I had to. If we didn't break up now, we'd have to break up someday. And I'd rather cut ties before I was in too deep. "You're already in too deep," the voice snarled. I ignored it. "Don't make this any harder than it has to be," I said. The terms were clear. We date for 2 months, then decide whether we're going to work. Well, those 2 months are over, and I've decided we won't.
You decided. I remember you saying something about this being a two-way street.
Javier's cold stillness fell away and revealed a blaze of emotion in his eyes.
Give me a good reason why we won't work.
We're too different.
That wasn't a problem when we were dating. Opposites have long-term relationships all the time, Luna. It's not a deal-breaker.
It is for us. Something large and jagged had taken up residence in my throat, and every word scraped painfully on its way out. I'm not meant for long-term relationships, okay? I get bored. Things don't work out. What we have is already complicated because we work together, and it's easier for both of us if we break up before we're forced to. I'd rehearsed my speech 100 times over the past 2 days, but it rang as false now as it had the first time. I did have a good reason for why we wouldn't work, but I couldn't tell him because I was terrified of him
of this, of us. He wouldn't knowingly hurt me, not right now. But if I gave him an inch, he'd take a mile. I'd succumb to his promises. His power over me would solidify, and one day, I'd wake up and realize he could break me into more pieces than anyone else. His offhanded comment, delivered in the heat of the moment last week, had sent me reeling. What would happen if he tried? Everything was fine during the honeymoon phase of a relationship, but that phase had to end eventually, and I refused to leave myself vulnerable when that happened. No matter how much it hurt in the short term, breaking up was the best thing to do in the long term.
Forced?
Javier's eyes flashed at my reply.
Who's going to force us, Sloane? Your family, our friends, the world? They can all fuck themselves.
Stop! This is the smart—
I don't give a damn about smart. I give a damn about us and the fact you're lying to me.
Heat seared my cheeks and chased away the bone-rattling cold. I am not lying, I snapped, trying to hide the waver in my voice. Do you remember when we ran into Mark at the restaurant? You said he couldn't take a hint. Don't repeat his mistake. It was a low blow, and my chest wrenched at Javier's resulting flinch. I didn't want to hurt him, but if that was what it took, that was what I'd do, no matter how much it destroyed me in the process as well.
Maybe. But there's a crucial difference between Mark and I.
Javier stepped toward me, and I instinctively took a step back. His broad shoulders filled the doorway, and though he hadn't officially entered my apartment, his presence permeated every molecule of air until all I could see, smell, taste was him. His earthy scent grabbed hold of my lungs and squeezed, and the memory of his skin beneath my touch was so vivid that, for a moment, I felt as though I could reach out and trace the echoes of our shared moments in the air.
Let me tell you a secret,
he said quietly. I crossed my arms, but it did nothing to stave off a cascade of shivers when he spoke again.
You kept asking me why I called you Luna. I didn't tell you because I was afraid it would send you running for the hills. Even before we kissed, before we were anything other than a publicist and her client, you were a light in my life. A persistent, sometimes scary one, but a light all the same.
Javier's throat bobbed with a hard swallow.
Luna is short for Mi Luna, my moon. Because no matter how dark the nights got, you were always there, shining so brightly that I always found my way through.
Prickles swarmed behind my eyes. My chest was a tightly wound spool of emotions, but I didn't touch it, afraid that a single unraveled thread would send me crashing down.
I don't know when it happened. One day you were someone I was stuck with if I wanted to keep my current lifestyle. The next, you were... you.
A sad smile touched Javier's lips.
Beautiful, brilliant, and so damn caring beneath that mask you present to the world. You can try to hide it, but it's too late. I've seen the real you, with all its perfect and broken pieces, and I love every single one of them.
The prickles reached the point of unbearable. They danced in front of my vision, blurring Javier's face and turning my world into a watercolor of emotions. Every dot stabbed at me, and I was sure that if he kept talking, and I didn't escape, I would bleed out right here on my living room floor. Stop, I whispered. He didn't.
I've been falling in love with you day by day for years, and I didn't even know it,
he said, his voice thick.
Well, now I know it.
Don't. The room constricted around me, squeezing the air from my lungs, and the simple act of breathing became an arduous task. My head swam. I wanted to hold on to something for steadiness, but Javier was the only thing within reach, and touching him would obliterate me. He pressed on, uncaring that he was flaying me alive.
I love you, Sloane. Every fucking inch of you. And I want you to look me in the eyes and tell me you don't feel the same. Tell me you aren't running because you're scared of getting hurt again.
Tell me you truly believe we can't work when the past 2 months have been the best of my life. Even with my father's death and Perry and a dozen things that went wrong, they were still perfect because you were there.
Trembles racked my body. The pressure was getting worse, and I couldn't contain it for much longer. That doesn't matter. The lie tasted so bitter I almost choked on it. I want you to leave. Please.
That's not what I asked you,
he said fiercely.
You've always been honest with me. Don't—
I am being honest. Something heavy and frantic seized control of my body and pushed at Javier's chest. He couldn't be here. He couldn't see me when I broke, and I knew with bone-deep certainty that I was on the razor's edge of breaking. I don't want you here. You love me, and I don't feel the same toward you, so go! Pushing him was like shoving a brick wall, but a tidal wave of panic imbued me with superhuman strength. I didn't see it happen. I just knew that one second, he was in the doorway. The next, I'd slammed the door in his face. The lock had barely clicked shut before I sank to the floor, my limbs quaking as I tried to tune out his knocks and pleas. The prickles coalesced into a sheet of white and gray, and the hollow ache that yawned inside me was so overwhelming, it felt like my very core had crumbled into dust. I'd never felt this level of despair, not even when I walked in on Bentley in Georgia all those years ago. I give a damn about us, and the fact you're lying to me. I couldn't see Javier through the blur in my eyes at the end, but I'd heard the anguish in his voice and felt it in the air. It had mirrored the same pain rushing in to fill the emptiness in my chest because he was right. I had lied to him. I cared, more than cared. He made me feel everything when I'd thought I could feel nothing, and that realization led to an undeniable truth. I loved him, so much so that I couldn't breathe, and I'd pushed him away because I knew love would only end in heartbreak. The journey wasn't worth the destination. I didn't know how long I stayed there, my back to the door and the weight of what I'd done anchoring me to the ground. But it was long enough that Javier's pounding had faded into silence. Something warm and wet slid down my cheek. It was such a foreign sensation that I didn't touch it, afraid of what I'd find, until it dripped from my chin. I pressed my fingers to my face. A drop of the substance trickled onto my lips. And it wasn't until I tasted its salty grief that I realized what it was. A tear.
Chapter 41. Javier. My family hadn't called me Pequeño Toro for nothing. Last night, I'd stayed outside Sloane's apartment until her neighbor came home and threatened to call the cops. Normally, that wouldn't have deterred me. The worst they could do was charge me with loitering. But Sloane wasn't going to change her mind and throw herself into my arms the same day we broke up. I needed a new strategy. I spent the entire train ride to DC that morning agonizing over it. Sloane said she didn't love me. But her reaction hadn't been that of someone who didn't care. I'd never seen her so distraught. And as much as it killed me to know she was hurting, her pain was a good thing. It meant she felt something. If she didn't, she would have simply dismissed me the way she had Mark. Ironically, the stronger her feelings, the more likely she was to shut down and pull away. Sloane was afraid of getting hurt again, but no amount of reassurances on my part could convince her she wouldn't get hurt somewhere down the line thanks to fuckface Bentley. She had to come to that conclusion herself. The question was, how could I get through to her? Because there was no way in fucking hell I was taking our breakup at face value. Not when it looked like it had destroyed Sloane as much as it had me. I don't want you here. You love me and I don't feel the same toward you, so go. A vice squeezed my chest. I rubbed a hand over my face trying to wipe the image of Sloane's tortured expression from my mind. Would you like another moment to daydream about frivolity or can we commence our meeting? A cold voice dragged me back to the present. It was as welcoming as a sea of cacti, but at least it successfully banished thoughts of my breakup, for now. Alex Volkov observed me from the other side of his desk. He radiated displeasure, but he was here, which was a semi-good sign. I had to postpone a family trip to the zoo to be here, so let's make this quick, he said.